Welcome to the podcast adaptation of A Consternation of Monsters, a collection of short stories by Eric Fritschues. Available online where fine books are sold. Today's tale, Foreword by Rick Winston.
Foreword by Rick Winston, host of UFO All Night.
Monsters are my bread and butter. My radio show, UFO All Night, check your local listings, largely revolves around them. And every night I take call after call from listeners who claim to have seen them, be they the little green ones who fly unidentified in our skies, or the ones who leave behind only giant footprints and blurry photos. I also take calls from those few deluded souls who still insist monsters do not exist in the first place, he types with a wink and a smile. I have to think about monsters quite a lot. One of the things I've never wondered about monsters, though, is what might be a good collective noun to describe them. Most of us know the standard collective nouns of nature: swarm of bees, gaggle of geese, pack of wolves, pride of lions, herd of cattle, pod of whales, school of fish, team of horses, and the one people like to cite the most, a murder of crows. But there are far better, more creatively conceived collective nature nouns out there. Dig around just a little and you'll find a mob of emus, an army of frogs, a busyness of ferrets, a sneak of weasels, an array of hedgehogs, a parliament of owls, and a cackle of hyenas, among many others. Another I particularly enjoy is an unkindness of ravens. However, the collective noun I find most apropos to primates of all shades is a shrewdness of apes. Monsters, though, never once considered it. A consternation is the collective description your author, Mr. Fritschues, came up with for monsters.
Footnote 1, at least he didn't call it a mash.
It's not easy to remember, sure, but it has a nice alliteration to it. Merriam-Webster defines it as a strong feeling of surprise or sudden disappointment that causes confusion. Describes the feelings generated by the typical monster encounter perfectly. Who's going to argue with him? Naturally, the internet. Trouble is, folks online can't seem to agree on a term of their own either, or whether or not one should even exist. Most seem happy to argue that because the term monster does not describe a single species in the first place, applying a collective noun to it is a useless proposition, and that no one should bother to try.
Footnote 2. One wise soul, David Malky, the brain behind the fantastic online comic Wondermark, has created a list of collective nouns for various classes of supernatural creatures found in literature and legend. Among the ones he has provided that I love are an academy of apparitions, a racket of banshees, a penumbra of spirits, a solace of Baba Yaga, a drove of elves, a fondle of unicorns, a clubbing of chupacabra, a ruminance of bigfeet, and an audacity of gargoyles. But he offers none for monsters as a whole.
I have a collective noun for a lot of those people too, but it's not a term I could use on the air, so I'll avoid it in print as well. I disagree with them. While monsters may come in many different forms and even different species, a few of which may yet prove to be real, living, breathing, formerly legendary animals someday, the base idea of the monster, the unknown thing in the darkness, is one of the most powerful concepts in history, and one found across all cultures. Monsters, in this way, have been with us from the dawn of time, have accompanied our species on its journey across the ages, and even now lurk in the darkened corners of the allegedly enlightened world of the 21st century. The archetype monster alone deserves a collective noun. Let me tell you a story about monsters and your author's home turf of West Virginia. Once or twice a year, representatives from one of the various cable television channels devoted to learning, science, or history phone me up to ask if I'd like to host a television version of my radio show. For various reasons, me being the antithesis of telegenic, possibly one, it's never quite worked out. But every year they try again, and once in a while they throw enough money at me that I venture forth from my comfortable broadcast studio to investigate the strange and unusual out in the real world. This is how I found myself in Durban, West Virginia, back in the mid-aughts. West Virginia is a state with a fairly large pedigree when it comes to the strange and unusual, some of which you'll learn about in this very collection. I could probably do a whole TV series set there, and others have tried. Durban itself is not precisely a weird place, though. It's a beautiful yet tiny community smack in the middle of the Monongahela National Forest, not far from the National Radio Astronomy Observatory at Greenbank. And it is a place that has remained largely unchanged for most of the past century. You can stand on the main drag through town, US 250, right across from the bright yellow train station of their scenic railroad, the Durban Rocket. And other than the Coke machine in front of the general store, you'd swear you had been transported back to the 1940s or earlier. We were there to use the Durban Rocket to recreate footage for a story about the ghost of Silver Run.
Footnote 3. Lady on a train got killed, came back to haunt the Silver Run tunnel. The real Silver Run, north in Ritchie County, lacks a proper historic train engine, such as the Durban Rocket.
One of the locals who'd been watching us film approached me for an autograph, and he happened to mention that he too had once seen something strange akin to a ghost. He was hesitant to spell it out at first, but I could tell from his manner that whatever he had seen had shaken him so badly that the very memory threatened to overcome him right then. I had to know his story. With some encouragement, he explained that as a teenager, he had once heard some odd noises coming from atop the tin roof of his family's barn. He crept out into the night, his daddy's shotgun in hand, only to find that the noises were being made by the boot-clad heels of a figure standing atop the barn. And that figure, he told me in a whisper, was none other than a headless horseman. That's right. A headless horseman. A horseman who, for reasons we can never be completely certain of due to the passage of time, no longer possesses a head.
Footnote 4. Or for that matter, a horse, since there was no mention of one accompanying the figure atop the barn. How the man knew it was a horseman, per se, remains unclear. Spurs, maybe?
Now, I know what you're thinking. Headless horseman. Right. That guy was yanking your chain, Rick. And logically, you'd be right. In our allegedly enlightened times, the very idea that a headless horseman actually exists, not to mention that someone would admit to seeing it, is utterly absurd. I wanted to reject it outright myself, except that I had seen the man's face as he told his story, and he was one scared dude. Which isn't to say he wasn't crazy, or hadn't been sipping from a jar of Eldridge County moonshine before he saw his horseman, but he fully believed he had seen himself a monster that night long ago. Most people would dismiss the man's tale as legend and folklore. Those labels are often slapped onto strange and unusual concepts that are not openly accepted. The trouble with dismissing legends and folklore, though, is that like their cousins, religion and mythology, there is at the heart of them a hard kernel of belief. At some point in history, someone believed in these monsters and legends powerfully enough that they passed the information on, be it in oral accounts, cave paintings, or the printed word. These legends and myths always make for fantastic stories, because deep down, we'd really like to believe them. In the face of all evidence to the contrary, we want to believe. And belief, my friends, is a powerful thing. You can dismiss it if you like, but I don't advise it. To do so is like trying to dismiss a barrel of mercury. It's slippery, beady stuff, and if you can't keep all of it in the barrel, you're in serious trouble. Oh, and it just might kill you if you're not careful with it. I did not then, nor do I now, dismiss the man's account of the headless horseman of Durban, just as I also do not dismiss the Mothman of Point Pleasant, nor the monster of Flatwoods, nor the Hucko of Mississippi, nor the various gods, angels, shadowy mobsters, men in black, wise old women, or once and future kings of rock and roll that also appear in this collection. Or the monsters. You'll find a whole consternation of them in these pages.
Footnote 5. As well as members of an unkindness, a pod, a penumbra, a pack, a sneak, and possibly a solace to boot.
And it's an apt term for them. because those of us who want to believe are forever in a state of consternation over the reality of such creatures, just as we would be consternated were we ever to meet one ourselves. A warning. The monsters you'll find here don't always lurk forth bearing fangs and claws, either. Often, they simply walk on two legs, we shrewd apes often being the most monstrous of God's creatures. I've not yet met the author of this book. I can tell from his work, though, that he knows a thing or two about the power of belief. I bet he knows the fear of it, too. He also seems to know that the best way to get my attention and to secure my services at writing heavily footnoted introductions is to drop my name into one of his stories. Next time I'm in the Mountain State, we'll have to have a beer, or maybe share a sip or two from a jar of that Eldridge County Mountain Nectar. Rick Winston.
Welcome. Today's podcast features a recording from the audiobook adaptation of the short story collection, A Consternation of Monsters, by the author Eric Fritschius,
as produced by Mr. Herman's Publishing Company and published by Audible.com and iTunes.
In point of fact, it is the foreword from the audiobook for A Consternation of Monsters, as written by, quote, radio host Rick Winston, unquote. The fact that the voices of Rick Winston and the author sound remarkably similar should not concern you.
'Cause they're not the same person at all. Nope, no way.
You can purchase the complete book in print or ebook formats at Amazon.com or in print and Nook ebook formats from BarnesandNoble.com. And, as indicated in the opening paragraph, you may also purchase the unabridged audiobook
of A Consternation of Monsters
from Audible.com, iTunes, or Amazon.com.
Among many other fancy online audiobook retailers, y'all.
Learn more about how to do so by clicking on the Audible.com or iTunes graphics in the sidebar of the author's website,
MrHerman.com. There you will also find the author's ongoing blog, where he writes more about the 10 stories that compose this collection,
revealing previously hidden truths about their creation.
For instance, the author reveals much about the secret origin of radio host Rick Winston,
alluding to the similarity in their voices,
as well as the origin of his short story, To a Flame,
which references Mr. Winston.
Boy. Them two guys sure do sound alike.
Not coincidentally, To a Flame will be the opening story adapted in the next episode of this very podcast. You should listen to it.
It will be a favorite.
Future episodes of the podcast will include radio-style adaptations of such stories as
Old Country, Wolves Among Stones at Dusk, and The Ones That Aren't Crows. Future episodes will also feature live readings of other stories and stage play adaptations of others.
Many of these stories might seem startlingly familiar to longtime subscribers to the feed for this podcast.
Some might even suggest that the author repackaged previously recorded episodes and re-released them,
changing only the commentary and matter to remove any plugs for signings and appearances long past,
and to reflect the recent publication of his audiobook in a shameless effort to get people
to purchase it.
Some might even suggest the author may also feel guilty at the amount of cussing contained within the commentary and matter of some of the previous versions of the podcast episodes,
particularly considering the number of school children he knows have been exposed to them.
These suggestions are, however, erroneous. The author is certain he will find new and better ways to cuss in the upcoming episodes.
You will all be offended.
Duty, duty, duty.
While some upcoming episodes may indeed be familiar, the author would like to assure you that there will be newly released material as well, excerpting stories that have not been previously adapted here.
There may even be live readings of new material and stories not found in the collection at all. In other words, the author is committed to providing more quality entertainment for your free podcast listening dollar.
Now go buy his book. If you enjoyed this podcast, please pass it on to others and be sure to give it a glowing review on iTunes.
If you did not enjoy this podcast, the author hopes you find a horseman standing atop your daddy's barn and that the horseman does not possess
a head. Music used in this podcast was composed and provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.
Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0.
Additional transcription vocal effects achieved through the use of text-to-speech.imtranslator.net.
Until next time, avoid monsters in all formations, but especially those in consternations.